Who Cut the String? Chapter 1. Preamble. This episode is going to be audio only, as I want to get the scripting spot on to ensure as much clarity as possible around some very weighty subjects. I want to run through a thought experiment with you all. I call it Who Cut the String? My hope is that this thought experiment will explore the issues that arise from the Judeo-Christian concepts of sin and the fall. These are promoted as Christian theological constructs that are necessary to make sense of the life, teaching, death, and resurrection of Christ. What I hope to explore is the reality, at least how I see it now, that when you get into the heart of these necessary, to Christianity, theological constructs, even if you take the original account of the Garden of Eden as metaphorical or hyper-real, they still don't make sense as you map them out onto the story of Jesus, humanity's ancient history, and therefore us today. You'll have to let me know how you find this audio presentation. I have a few more planned, and if they land in the way I hope, I think they might be a great way for me to begin to explore specific subject areas of interest in a robust and honest way. There is a fair bit of ground to cover for this thought experiment, so let's press on. Chapter 2. The String. Imagine that there is a string from the start of existence to you today. It is unseen but tangible, and it is irrevocably attached to you. This string is made of three things. Firstly, it's your purpose. Secondly, it's your connection to God. And thirdly, it's a relationship that needs to be maintained both ways. To clarify, the string reaches back to God, back to existence itself, and the triangle of purpose, connection, and relationship are linked from Him to you. Chapter 3. God and Theology. Christianity claims that there is a being called Yahweh, a being whom we can know and who ultimately knows us. Sin, whose blame is laid at the feet of every human, has stopped us from entering into a relationship with God. We are told that God's holiness means that the bar is placed at a height which isn't traversable for mortals in their fallen and sinful state. Sin, Christianity claims, is stopping us from entering into God's presence, and unless one is able to live a sinless life, then it isn't possible to hit the bar and be joined with God. We can't live a sinless life, so we can't enter God's presence. We can't know Him. The Bible tells us that there was a being, God Himself, who entered into our story in the form of Jesus, who was able to live a sinless life. He was killed and then bodily raised 3 days later by God as an atonement for all, so that if they so desire, they can now be rejoined to God. Sin, whose blame, as I've already mentioned, is laid at the feet of every human, means that the string, our purpose, connection, and relationship connecting us to God, was cut at some point in actual history, and it was cut by us. We will explore this further, but firstly, let's see what Romans 3, 21-26, taken from the ESV, says about Jesus' sacrifice. But now, the righteousness of God has been manifested apart from the law, although the law and the prophets bear witness to it. The righteousness of God through faith in Jesus Christ for all who believe. For there is no distinction, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, and are justified by His grace as a gift through the redemption that is in Christ Jesus, whom God put forward as a propitiation by His blood to be received by faith. This was to show God's righteousness, because in His divine forbearance He had passed over former sins. It was to show His righteousness at the present time, so that He might be just and the justifier of the one who has faith in Jesus. Here we have Paul's words, a core Christian doctrine, explaining that we are not able to meet the mark, but God has done it for us. And if we have faith in Jesus Christ, we can, so to speak, record the string and join our purpose, connection and relationship back to God. Chapter 4, Diving Deeper. There is a biblical story upon which the theological, sacrificial atonement of Christ is built. It is here that I want to turn to next. The first few pages of Genesis tell us that there was a time in history, long past, when we knew God and He knew us, that the string, our purpose, connection, and relationship to God, was indeed fully intact. Within this story, we are told of a tree of the knowledge of good and evil, a tree within the Garden of Eden, producing fruit that humanity's ambassadors are told not to eat. Long story short, these ambassadors of humanity end up eating the fruit and ultimately cutting the string between them and God. In one fell swoop, the tables are turned, and every human in that instant, and from that moment on, is no longer linked to their purpose, connection, and relationship. Christians often claim that this is a just action on God's behalf, but here I want to raise my first concern. The very knowledge that these ambassadors of humanity would need to make an informed decision wasn't in hand when they took their detrimental action. Good and evil are the very poles required to read the compass of right and wrong. And if good and evil aren't known, then they aren't things you can judge something by, as it is yet to take that knowledge on. To judge something for a decision it made and to judge it against a standard it did not possess, well, that doesn't make sense. You're demanding the cart of knowledge was before the horse of action, and there isn't a way to square this circle. Without a line in the sand, without knowledge of good and evil, how could one possibly be held to account? It is for this reason that many decide to claim a theological position, stating that the story of Genesis isn't true, but rather it's a metaphor, or hyperreal, designed to clearly explain that humanity, at some point, decided to cut their purpose, connection, and relationship to God, that the real sin was to reject God's ambassadorship over this world and damn us all. My first concern, aimed at Genesis literalists, is that humanity couldn't have made an informed decision to cut the string, and thus, on moral grounds, humanity doesn't deserve the blame that the biblical account lays at our feet. My second concern, aimed at Genesis interpreters, those claiming metaphor or hyper-real meaning from the text, is that we don't have any evidence that humanity ever knew a God whom they could cut the string from. Let's explore this further. Chapter 5, Evolution and Evidence. We have a lot of evidence that humans evolved into the us we are today over millennia, but we have no evidence that there was a time in history when a human decided to cut their purpose, connection, and relationship to God and go on their own way. To note this second concern clearly, if Genesis is a metaphor or hyperreal, it still requires a time and place within reality for the cuts to be made. You see, for a sin to enter, the fall first has to take place. As we look at humanity's story of ancient ancestors and then the proto-humans that led to us, it is clear that cognition has developed before us and in us, piecemeal, bit by bit, slowly over time. There doesn't look to be any sign that our forebears knew a God personally as He walked amongst them, that they were able to make a decision with the knowledge of the outcome that they cursed the rest of us to a life of relationshiplessness with God, and that they cut all our strings. There isn't a point within our history that shows death entered the world suddenly, that humanity's story changes from good to bad. In fact, we see horror, pain, death, guilt, love, hope, and need spanning before Homo sapiens were even on the scene. What we do see is the slow development of belief and thought in our ancestors. There is evidence of ritual burial from Neanderthal sites, those who were not us, but close to us. They seem to have still explored the concept of death and life, maybe even an afterlife, we cannot know. Whatever the case, it is clear to most that there is a human quality to the care they took for their dead. It's for the following reason that a metaphorical or hyperreal reading of Genesis doesn't make sense. 1. Cognition has slowly evolved. 2. We have no evidence that a god once walked amongst our forebears. 3. We need a defined time and place for sin to enter and make sense of the biblical claims. Chapter 6. An always fallen state. Some Christians claim that humanity has always been within a fallen state, and thus this fits with the evolutionary history we know to be true. It should be noted that this grates against the biblical narrative of sin. Sin is laid at the feet of all humans. It requires God to intervene in the form of Jesus, and the Bible claims we made a deliberate decision and then action to cut the string on our purpose, connection, and relationship to God by disobeying Him. If sin was always there, and it's part of our makeup from the get-go, then we haven't sinned, as no deliberate action was taken on our behalf. We never had a choice in these matters, and therefore, we are not guilty of failing to hit the bar required to enter into God's presence. If we are not guilty, then the onus to re-court the string, if one decides to claim an evolutionary fallen state for a relationship, is on God. My third concern, aimed at an always fallen state interpretation of the text, is that this isn't what the biblical accounts claim, and so it grates against their ancient and original meaning. It also makes little sense of the idea of the fall being humanity's fault. Chapter 7. The challenge. To restore a fall, you need a fall in the first place, and as we've explored, there doesn't seem to be evidence for a fall to have taken place. It is for this reason I want to level my challenge clearly here. The work is not behind, but ahead of theologians, to explain clearly what sin is, how it comes into the world through a fall, and how it maps firstly to humanity's story, and secondly to a textual, biblical model that holds water. For it seems to me that if God is real, then this Christian motif doesn't mirror his reflection. Rather, it is badly cracked and in need of rethinking, or maybe replacing, altogether. Chapter 8. Who cut the string? I asked you at the start to imagine that there is a string from the start of existence to you today. It is unseen, but tangible, and it is irrevocably attached to you. This string is made of three things. Firstly, it is your purpose. Secondly, it's your connection to God. And thirdly, it's a relationship that needs to be maintained both ways. To clarify, the string reaches back to God, back to existence itself, and the triangle of purpose, connection, and relationship are linked from Him to you. So here is the challenge. Pull the string and tell me if it's loose or taut. Tell me, is it cut or whole? To the non-believer, for you, the very idea of a string doesn't make sense. As to whom could one be connected? To the Christian, if you claim it is cut, as you must, and that we are in need of Jesus' life, death, and resurrection, then without doing theological, moral, and evolutionary gymnastics, and taking what I've said to heart, answer me this. Who cut the string, and when was the cut made? I hope you enjoyed this episode of When Belief Dies. As always, to leave any comments or thoughts, head on over to YouTube. To follow me on Twitter, or to see where else I'm online, check out the links in the description. Thank you to all our regular givers for making this show a reality. And until next time, enjoy the journey.